This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 447. Brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 447. I am Josh Flanagan, and with me are Paul Montgomery.
Good to be here.
And Ryan Haupt.
Hello, everybody.
He will be guesting for Connor Kilpatrick, who has, I guess, differing priorities. He's on vacation, which is totally fine. I saw him last week. First time I've seen him in a while. It was very nice. So thanks for filling in, and I'm looking forward to this. So let's have fun. We are iFanboy. We like comic books. Every week we read a whole bunch of them. One of us has the job of picking the one that they like the best. They call that the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that on the show at the beginning, at the top, about 10 minutes. And then we'll talk about the other books that we read this week, and then we'll do some questions, some other stuff, whatever. You know, we tend to divert from time to time. Before we get going, this is your warning, there will be spoilers. We're going to talk about what happened in the books this week, because that makes a much better conversation than pussyfooting around it. So if you haven't read your books yet, come back later after you have, or just power through regardless. This week, Paul had the pick.
I like this episode already. I like this one. This is a good feel to it.
Okay, good.
It's nice. Yeah. How do you feel about it?
I feel really good.
Feel good? Ryan?
Oh, man. I can't even tell you how good I feel.
All right,
that was the sound of a person who had been distracted from writing an email.
Ryan.
Like, he was like clickety, clickety.
Ryan. Not good. So the pick of the week is another Image number one. It is Low number one by Rick Remender and Greg Tocchini.
Just mathematically, most of them will have to be Image number one.
Yeah, it's got some Rush Wheaton in there.
I think that's 40% of the books that are on the market.
It's definitely not a normal distribution. It's probably closer to a Poisson distribution.
And
Poisson. I did it. Josh speaks French. He knows what I'm talking Poussé, about.
Fish,
I believe. It's in a weird shift from form. This is a science fiction book from Image Comics.
What?
It's a new science fiction book from the Rick Remender. And so years from now, here's the pitch. Years from now, the sun is lashing out in its death throes, scorching and irradiating the surface of the Earth.
Quite a few years from now.
It's it's a while. It's at least 4 years.
This isn't like during the Hillary Clinton presidency.
Yeah. So angry listeners just turned off. Ah. What is that?
It's my Hillary Clinton.
I didn't know if it was your Hillary Clinton or your iFanboy listeners who don't like Hillary Clinton lashing out.
It's whatever you want it to be. I'm not willing to put myself in a box like
lashing
that.
Out like the sun does in its death throes, scorching and irradiating the earth, which sends humanity in a retreat down to the depths of the sea. Ryan, we can talk about the science of that because that's your specialty.
For a moment, I thought I was reading a Black Science spinoff.
Yeah.
Because, there's some similarities here. But deep sea, water is a very good insulator of heat. It has a very high heat capacity. That's why it takes, it's the whole watch pot never boils. Water requires a lot of energy to raise its temperature. So if the sun was actually in its death throes, I don't actually know how long we'd have in between when the sun started going through its death throes to when it actually through its death.
The long goodbye.
It's a lot of years.
I mean, we got billions of years. I think we're about halfway through the sun's lifespan at this point. But in the course of its lifespan, it's going to become a red giant star. And the Earth is done at that point. It's going to, so
it'll be
the sun does not have to die for us to still be wiped out by its evolution.
So, I mean, the ultimate goal is we're hopefully going to find another planet out there somewhere. But for right now, we can't live on the surface. So we gotta doggy paddle down as far as we can go into the ocean and live down there.
No, I love it. I think that's really a really interesting premise.
Yeah, it's a really neat idea. And then, like, they're down there so long and they can't figure it out. And they're they can't look out and, like, look at outer space because it's so much farther up now that they're sort of like, and they kind of, it's like summer reading, and you're like, wait until the last week, and you're trying to get through de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, and it's just not happening. Sorry, it's a personal story. But anyways, they're like, we're kind of stuck down here, and they start building like a new mythology.
It's like Wall-E.
It's a little like that, yeah.
They're on their life ship, there was they a just plan, forget that and there was like, anything, and they're there. Yeah, it's funny, I don't think I got what a lot of that was. I don't know if I was paying attention enough in the beginning. Like, I had it by the end, but I wasn't clear that they were underwater.
And also by the end, if you read Rick Remender's essay, he sort of like lines it all up for you.
But, yeah, that helped.
That was very helpful. But I picked it up as it went along. I was like, okay, and that just sort of confirmed it by the end. But anyways, we've got this sort of like Lara and Jor-El kind of characters. That's how they felt to me. There's the two scientists who are, hanging out all naked. In their Greg Tocchini wonderfulness, and
that guy draws a sexy naked lady,
and everybody's naked. And
yeah, I know, but I'm just saying.
Everybody's sexy.
Everybody's sexy.
It's true, actually. I'm looking at him. I'm looking at him in his little water bath.
Yeah,
he's pretty sexy. Too.
Hanging out in the little pond, and so it's gorgeous. But they're talking, and it's very It's a bit of exposition going on, and it's a bit heavy, but it reminded me of sort of the Shakespearean way that they presented Krypton, or as I pronounce it, Krypton, in the Superman movie.
Hello, my son.
Hello,
it looks very Kryptonian.
It had that feel to me, and they're talking about we got to go explore, we got to figure this out, and he wants to take their two daughters. They have two daughters, and they have a son, and the son is basically a mechanic. And or an engineer, and then the two daughters are younger, and he thinks their vocation might be to pilot this mech suit, which they call a helm, which he says only people in the Kane family that they're a part of can pilot. And they're like sort of the last scions of this Cain family, and they have this powerful suit. And you find out later that it's actually keyed into their DNA, and it's through the eyeball. So that's, it's not a mystical thing. It's, there's actually a science to it. But they're so far removed from the science or the original science that it's become like this arcane thing, like a religion almost, that you're the chosen one who can pilot this suit. And it's going to be one of these two girls. And they go out on a routine sort of thing out into the ocean, and they see some big octopus creatures, and there's some pirates out there, which are, what do they call them, scurvies?
Yes.
Yeah, they call them scurvies.
Scurvies.
There's no limes.
There's no citrus out there.
There's no limes, not one.
They're not happy, and it leads me to believe that there might be a larger story going on in terms of the haves and the have-nots, maybe.
Yeah.
And I suspect that we're going to have a bit of a time jump, and I based part of that on promo art, that we're going to see these girls who are kidnapped by the scurvies maybe grown up a bit, and one of them maybe pilots that helmet.
I also think it's interesting that we're dealing with this sibling relationship, and they're a lineage of Cain, and then there's like this other out there. Like, I would be disappointed in Remender if we did not see some very interesting biblical symbolism with Cain and Abel.
Kind of Abel.
Yeah.
Right. Like, maybe the reason that the Cains are the founder of this sub-city is that they had to take out some Abels along the way, and maybe those past crimes will come back to haunt them. You know, like, that to me is really fascinating. I mean, one of my favorite novels of all time is East of Eden.
Yep.
And so, like, I really like that mythology of siblings and rivalries and lineage and what that can do to a person.
I think there's a really nice chance of, since it's everything at the very beginning started off perfect, you know, like it was a wonderful, they're beautiful, intelligent people. And like, we were going to find out that they're the bad guys, you know, like kind of, or maybe unintentionally. Like, there's a nice area for a reversal, or at least upheaval expectations, I think, with it.
Well, even within this issue, I mean, it's bookended by complete despair and horror. Like, the way Ticini draws, you know, the helm suit, and then there's like this leviathan kind of, like, you know, fishy, snaky creature swimming around, and it's just kind of scary. And the title page,
the giant squids are what they're calling the mammoths. So, like, right. I was really confused when they talk about hunting mammoths, but I'm like, wait, they're underwater. Like,
yeah,
what's
going on here? Is there like an elephant swimming around? Like, what are they talking about?
Well, it's because we have, in our actual real world, there's the giant squid, but then there's the squid that people don't know as much about, which is called the colossal squid. So I'm assuming this is the next step in that, you know. And a giant squid alone is a big enough animal that if it were on a basketball court that was obviously flooded with water, it would be able to slam dunk on both hoops simultaneously.
I just imagine a giant or a colossal squid on a Harlem Globetrotters roster.
They've got suction cups. They could hold the ball. They could palm it for lack of a better squid word.
SpongeBob SquarePants. So.
Oh, Dad. Are you watching a lot of that these days?
No, I've only seen that show in a professional capacity while working for Nickelodeon, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I tried to watch it once, but everything kept yelling and I hated it. It was like,
forbidden, like, in the Flanagan household.
Sounded like Hillary Clinton.
What do you think about Jor-El here's mustache?
I don't think I noticed it, but when you mention it and you say it like that, I want to like his mustache. Oh, it's like a
catfish. it's like a weird Fu Manchu kind of thing.
Like one of those like ancient one of those sort of stereotypical Chinese ones, right?
Yeah.
Well, it would maybe make sense that this culture is built up of various vestiges of ethnic and cultural things from the past, and that mustache is what survived.
And even the pirates, there's sort of like an Asian inspiration, like he's wearing like a kimono.
Well,
kind of
that's
thing.
Most of the people. It's like Firefly.
Yes,
I guess. So it makes sense, sort of. If you whittle it down to a monoculture, then you'll have a little bit of that stuff. But I don't know. It's kind of a neat. I don't know. It's a shorthand to the other, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about Greg Ticini's art here? Because I know he's pretty polarizing.
Why?
I like
why do you
him.
Think he's polarizing?
Lots of people don't like him.
Yeah.
Why? What do they not like?
I think
they don't like him drawing their superheroes.
I think that's true.
But have they seen him draw naked people? Because These naked people look awesome.
I always like when Greg Dottini draws naked people.
I don't
people.
Think most people read, what was that story? What was the one that Rick did with him?
The Last Days of American Crime.
Last Day of American Crime. I don't think most people read that. So the first time they saw him was when he came on to Uncanny X-Force. And, you know, that can be polarizing
for
some
people.
What
else did he do?
I'm not sure, but like it was sort of the same reaction to it. I think that he's really talented, obviously. I think this has a really great world design to it. I love his use of he has a way of doing a big shot, like a big establishing shot, and he draws it sort of like Jock does, where he adds wide angle lines, so like it curves as if you're looking through a wide angle lens.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a technique I really, really like in comic art. When it's like his stuff, like it looks like it's really drawn. It doesn't, you know what I'm saying, like you can see the lines, you can tell it's expressionistic, I suppose, is what I'm getting at.
Yes.
And I think
sometimes some panels I do struggle with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
overall, I like the, you know, so there's some storytelling issues, but overall feel of the art
right.
is just so
tone and design are so spot on that you can let a lot of that go, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who have trouble with inconsistency of figures. And I think since the daughters look so similar and they have
be
the
issue.
Same hair as the mother, Stell, I believe, who Remender refers to as the main character, which is interesting, especially where we leave off these characters, and in total despair. But in terms of Ticini's art, I think, you know, there are some times where I was like, I have to reread a panel or something. Mm-hmm. Like the storytelling rhythm isn't exactly there, but I think I'm willing to make that concession for. It's just such gorgeous art, and
I think that this is a guy who benefits for having a story built around his particular skill set.
Yes.
So whereas, you know, you may not like him drawing Wolverine, fine. This isn't that. That's not what that guy's meant to do. So this is cool, as far as I'm concerned.
And I mean, the colors in this are just kind of crazy. I mean,
did he color it, or is it like Lowridge or something?
I believe it's just him.
Yes, it is. Yep. He's
artist. Does the everything.
I mean, like this is a through line between, you know, all of Rick Remender's work, even at Marvel, which is impressive, is that, you know, the guy's an artist himself, and he has always been, he's got a great eye for collaborators.
And he always refers to his collaborators, you know, as like scientists.
Yep.
And which I've always liked.
Me too.
You know that he's a guy who by, you know, because he is one, he always respects his artist and his we're talking about him a lot, but like his project collaborations, and I like that. Like they all have they're all very much like the books exist because of the writer, but also like that project exists because of that artist. So they're made for them, sort of like the Helm suit. Thank you very much.
And so, I mean, this had a lot going for it, and a pretty strong week of comics. It's got a mech suit. It's got Underwater, which I like. And it's got Greg Dottini, which I like a lot. And
the other thing
is that it seems to be a really personal story. And it's, you know, I a lot... A
All
lot
of this stuff seems like personal stories.
Yeah, I mean, between the essay and this, and then the essay and, like, you know, Deadly Class, like, it's just... But it also reminds me of what Jason Aaron and Jason Latour said in Southern Bastards, that they're writing these really personal books. And I think it's really cool. It's not just crazy science fiction and crime books happening in Image. It's also just really intimate stories.
I was so bummed I couldn't be here for the Southern Bastards discussion.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I had a lot to say.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to time that for one of the later ones.
I'm definitely interested in your thoughts on that.
So we're not going to do that
now,
though.
There's a bunch of Yanks talking about it.
What we are going to do, again, very quickly, is actually we're going to talk about another Rick Remender book, and I promise I will make it relatively brief. Black Science number 7 also came out. Certainly, you can see there's a connection between these kind of books and sort of ideas and world building and science fiction, and this is one thing, but they're very different. This is the first issue back after a little hiatus, and then the sort of epochal turn that happened at the end of the last one, where the guy who we thought was the main character was killed off.
Reluctant adoption.
Yeah. And this is sort of what happened to them after that. And then Kadir, who was thought to be the bad guy, but he's coming back to rescue them. And really, the thing that I want to talk about in this, really more than anything, is that we had mentioned before that Matteo Scalera needs to stop it. and I just want to bring up the point that right now he needs to fucking stop it.
Barreling out of control. Too good.
Matteo Scalera's art has got to be one of the most beautiful things that I have put my eyes on in many, many eons. And I am just...
Eons?
Eons. I've used Epochal and Eons.
That's one of my favorite villains in a Rankin and Bass live stop motion thing.
And as I read through this, I just love all of the influences that are going on in this art. I love the angles that he chose. I love his character design, and I love the goddamn speed lines everywhere, because this book does not stop moving. It's this constant motion. It's going towards you, away from you, through the panels. Everything is going all the time. It is the most exciting panel layout I've ever it is so dynamic. It's constant motion. It's like the best of manga, you know, with the best of wherever the hell he's at. Brazil, I want to say. I'm not sure. I think it's Brazil, but I think this is a lot of really good Brazilian artists right now.
The thing I noticed with Matteo Scalera, and this is I guess I really noticed it in that I guess it was Indestructible Hulk arc he did with Daredevil coming in. Mm-hmm. And he's just this great understanding of energy. Mm-hmm. And that's great with the Hulk.
But it's so
Even at rest.
Do other stuff. Italy. He's Italian.
There you go. His Hulk is like, you know, it's kinetic energy. Mm-hmm. But Ryan, don't say anything.
One thing I do want to say about this book is... I got to give Rick Remender credit, because so often in comics and in popular culture in general, scientists are very one note. They're either the dweeby nerd sidekick who provides the solution to the real hero, or they're the maniacal mad scientist who's out to ruin everything. And Black Science, you know, Rick Remender's actually writing characters who I know. Like, I could tell you that, you know, who these characters are in my own life, because I'm like, yeah, I know the guy who is that crazy about his work, but also cares a lot about his family, and like it, they're nuanced, they're complex, and they're people that I recognize as a scientist who interacts a lot with other scientists.
There are many scientists in this.
Yes,
and not just the one. Usually, there's the one scientist. Whereas in Black Science, there are many scientists.
And Rick is just—he's really killing it on characterizing them as human beings, not as caricatures. And so I got to give him a lot of accolades for that.
Can somebody just in Italian send something out that you need to fucking stop it, Matteo Scalera? You got to stop
in a good way.
In a good way. It's so good.
I could say it in Spanish, but I don't know if he speaks Spanish.
They're related romance languages.
They are. They're very similar romances.
I will just go ahead and go for French. Arrête maintenant.
Alto, por favor.
So as it turns out, this is the perfect episode to have Ryan on because it's Science Week. Deep Gravity number one. Which was plotted by Mike Richardson, or was the original story, it was by Mike Richardson of Dark Horse, and then scripted by Gabriel Hardman and Karina Becco, with art by Fernando Balu? Baldo, sorry. That's a D, not an O.
Oh, I thought it was the bear.
Ryan, what did you think of this?
Loved it.
Loved it? Yeah, good.
Oh, yes. This is what I wanted Avatar to be.
Avatar a lot. Reading this.
This is like Avatar with the sensibility of the roughneck space people of Alien, you know?
Yeah.
This is beautiful. I loved it. Yeah, I loved everything about this. You know,
Aliens?
I would say the first Alien, where it's the roughneck sitting around the ship, you know, that sort of attitude. With a little bit of that terrible show on Fox where they go back in time with the dinosaurs.
Oh, God, yeah.
Remember that one?
I do.
I don't even remember what it's called. Terra Nova.
I just remember seeing promos for it in the movie theaters.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my only real.
Yeah. You know, the book was great. It's a really interesting high concept sci-fi stuff. But then, like, the second that it starts to get a little too heady, it cuts to a couple of different really human relationships that are happening with the characters involved in the story. And, you know, there's intrigue and mystery. And I just, yes, everything about this was on point for me.
So we have a planet very far away that is
not that far away.
Well, not that far away.
That's actually my biggest criticism.
You couldn't walk there.
It looks a lot like Jurassic Park.
my biggest criticism is that there's no other stars within 3 light years of us. So unless they're traveling faster than the speed of light, I don't know where this planet is.
Maybe it popped up just recently within
maybe this time. Fine. I'm just throwing it out there. If it was within 3 light years, we would have seen it.
Seriously, those are the fences from Jurassic Park.
They are, but and there's like crazy, like when they're heading down, like whatever you knew about plants, it's not true. It's like they're plants and animals are the same thing, man. They're the same thing, man. And they turn out to be
biological distinction.
Big crazy plants, and scaring them, spooking them with the lights because they're under sort of red dwarf. They say it's not as bright or pure a white light, so they're not used to lamps, basically. I like this as it's kind of funny when you actually break it down that it's a guy who got dumped by this woman, and she goes
dumped by her leaving the planet,
goes to another planet to do some research or whatever, and then he follows her there, and it's like a six-year trip, and she's like, this is kind of weird. I would just push him right into the Jurassic Park fences, honestly. Like, it's a little strange, but I think it's off to a good start.
We all know that guy.
I think for me, this is just sort of, I enjoy this as an appetizer for the big creator-owned thing that Gabe and Karina are going to be doing at Image? Image.
I think so. Yes, it is that. Know that. I actually missed this. I feel bad about it because I would have liked to read this, but I will read it now.
It's fun. It's Avatar, but good.
Fine. Yeah. No, real good. So do you guys remember the last time that this Hawkeye story took place?
No.
Okay, so Hawkeye 19 came out this week, and I started reading, and I thought, what the hell's going on? Then I went, all right, they got shot. So then I went back, and I was trying to find out in what issue that happened. This is issue 19.
Yes.
But there were several issues between that when that happened and this one where, like, they spent time with Kate. There was the
weird Christmas issue?
Yep.
Yeah.
There's several. So, like, the actual last time the story was, I believe, January, maybe February.
Good Lord.
Which is a really long time.
January was when he got shot?
Yes.
Wow.
And because I kept getting the issues because I'd like download the one. I was like, no, that's not it. And I went back like 4 or 5 issues. Like, it was a long time. And
I knew it was long, but damn.
It was, I know, I was super surprised. And so immediately I was angry. And I thought, why would you do this? I mean, it was Matt Fraction writing it. I mean, like it you needed to, I mean, maybe there's something to do with David Ajay. I needed to do it, but it was a really long time. And I really didn't remember where we had left off and what had happened. And it chagrins me to say this, but I was almost angry because it was a really, really good issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, if I had a pick of the week, this might have been it, because at the end of the day, I really hate the way that it's being scheduled because it's very difficult to follow a story that is this nuanced, I suppose. They're not explaining shit to you. You have to go along with it, but I feel like I've been reading it forever and we're just getting back to it too. Now. I mean, it's a half a year at least.
I want to go back and read that previous, the January issue that you're talking about, because for me, looking at this, there's two ways that you can sort of take a long delayed sort of installment, we'll say, and then it feels like it recreates that excitement and it feels like a new thing. Mm-hmm. It's brand new again, or I totally don't have the context for this. And it's almost impenetrable. And I just, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I know it's good. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It fell out of the rhythm.
You did. And it's a problem because.
Part of it's my problem.
Well.
Well, do either of you guys speak American Sign Language?
No, which I didn't mind.
I can say cactus.
So basically, one of the things is that Clint Barton loses his hearing in this because he's shot in the ear. No, he's stabbed in the ear with his arrows, I believe. I don't know because it happened in Hawkeye 15 back in February, which I'm actually looking at right now. But there's sort of a backstory to Hawkeye that, again, they don't really explain, but you kind of have to know, is that he had been deaf at one point.
Like as a kid?
I don't remember.
It's just that's what I they know, made it seem like in the in this comic, and that was something I did not know about the character.
I had forgotten it, but like I was like, oh yeah, that was a thing. So in this is basically Barney, who by the way was a bad guy until very recently.
Right.
Barney is sort of yelling at him.
And now he's like a better person than Clint.
Yeah, and he's well, that's apparently not supposed to be hard in this version. But there's a lot of Barney trying to get Clint to get off his ass, and a lot of it is told in sign language, which is so beautifully illustrated. I don't even say drawn, like it's illustrated. Like the sort of depth to which David Aja's skill goes is as it's sort of a technical artist is kind of amazing. And I didn't mind that I didn't know exactly what was going on because I understood based on the context of everything. And I like that. You remember a long time ago in, I want to say, Queen and Country, Greg Rucka did a bunch of scenes that were in French and he didn't put subtitles in?
Yep.
And I think that subtitles are dumb in comics if they're drawn well. Because you shouldn't need the words. I think Mike Norton said that once a really long time ago. He said you should be able to take the words out of the comic and still be able to tell what's going on. If you can do that, it's a well-drawn story. Mm-hmm. And this is what they did here, which is why I was totally cool with it.
Yeah.
And there's a big rallying thing at the end where he sort of gets all the neighbors. And it's not told. It's shown. And I really like that. And I really love the last two pages. Where and sometime in the next 9 months, maybe we'll see the next part.
I don't know, if it had like a pizza dog in a mech suit or something and it was underwater, it totally would have been pick of the week, but
yeah. No, I like Barney has the gas cans on his wheelchair. It's just a really great sort of cliffhanger last two pages. Like I said, I was resentful that I liked it so much because I was mad at what they did to me, but
and I know people who read this in collections and there's, you know, no problem. Smooth sailing, that's the way to go.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the way.
So, a new Vertigo number one. I don't know, Josh, you kind of like Vertigo a bit.
I do, and I make an effort to try Vertigo number ones, at least that interest me. And even ones that kind of interest me, unless it's a zombie book, I don't really care. So this week was Bodies number one, which I didn't know what it was, because I didn't know it was coming. I just saw this sort of really attractive cover. With a Union Jack and a sort of a bit of a body on it. And I don't know what I thought. I didn't love it. It's got this sort of like cheesecake's not the word, like a pinup, like a classy sort of 40s pinup girl in the front.
Yeah,
the pearls and then sort of Victorian lettering. And it's basically like it takes place over, it's a Jack the Ripper killing.
Right.
Told in three different eras.
Four?
Is it four? I guess you're right.
Yeah.
In different art styles, in each era.
It's modern day.
Oh, actually, look, there's 2014, 1890, 2050, and 1940.
Right.
Written by Cy Spencer, who's not the same person as Cy Spurrier.
Yeah, I was reading it, and I was like, oh, Cy Spurrier. And then after I got that, I was like, oh, Cy Spencer, who did that Hellblazer miniseries with
Sean
Murphy.
Oh, okay. I didn't love it. It's interesting, and it's not bad, but I don't know.
I was like, I have no idea what Josh is going to think of this, but he should definitely read it just to figure that out as my guinea pig, because it's got a ton of stuff. He's my guinea pig. There's a ton of stuff in here that is totally Josh, and there's a ton of stuff in here that's totally not Josh. Like, there's, you know... there's World War II stuff. Come on.
Drawn by Phil Winslade.
Phil Winslade. I was like, come on. I was looking forward to getting to the Phil Winslade. Not that the other stuff wasn't great. And wasn't that Tula Lote? Didn't she do that weirdly named Warren Ellis thing last week?
Did she? Yes, I believe so.
I remember you enunciating her name. So it was like...
no surprise, the parts that I liked were 1890 and 1940.
Right,
I didn't connect to the other parts very much. I don't so much like reading Jack the Ripper fiction.
I figured that probably went into like the zombie thing, even though it's not the same.
I like Jack the Ripper history, and I've walked, you know, I've walked through Whitechapel. I've, you know, like I care enough about it.
I've walked those streets.
No, like I specifically when I was in London, that was
the
a thing
joke
that I
about prostitution. Josh.
Oh yeah, no, I blew that guy. Blew him good. He gave me a copper. And so I liked those. I did like the art on those parts the most too. but I don't know what to think. I don't know. I'm definitely going to read the next one.
So the hook here is that it's the same body in
Discovered.
Yeah, that's well. That's another thing that's explained in the essay in the back.
So that shouldn't be.
There's all these. I figure it's contained within the comic itself, so it's okay.
I mean, I got that there was a relation. It was the same wounds, but
yeah, it's apparently the same body discovered in all four, which is a very that's kind of a Doctor Who kind of idea. It's a big grisly for a Doctor Who story, but finding the same thing in four different time periods is very,
I'm gonna read it.
Yeah,
but
the whole thing, all 60 issues.
Well, come on. Let's look at today's economy and see how that goes. I'm going to read a few more and see where it goes. I need something to tie it. I put it alongside like Trillium, where it was a thing like I was like, that's interesting. And it didn't really do anything for me. And I didn't see how the things were really related or what the point was. It felt a little – it was not similar to that, but I had the sort of same reaction to it.
Mm.
But it's interesting. So I'm gonna give it a little more and we'll hopefully –
so-
waiting for that next Vertigo series.
So very quickly, does it feel sometimes like it might be the last one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely. So you're just clinging on like this could be it.
Let's try it now. Like they're all doing books at Image now.
So I figured since big Guardians of the Galaxy movie this week, we should check in and see what's going on with the Guardians of the Galaxy comic. Also tie that in with some more Marvel Cosmic with Cyclops number 3. So Cyclops number 3, Guardians of the Galaxy number 7. Where should I start?
Cyclops number I didn't read Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, so that's fine. So we'll do Cyclops.
Cyclops 3. This series has gotten better every issue I've read, and I really enjoy it. It's Greg Rucka doing something that is not like a thing Greg Rucka would do.
Son stuff, which I don't think I've ever seen him do before.
No, he's really good at character, and I don't know anything. Whenever I've heard any stories about Cyclops' history or his origin, I've rolled my eyes. I don't want anything to do with it. But it's written so well and it's so interesting. And it's the wish of the son to have a great father who cares about him after he didn't have him for his whole life. And you know that's a big old fantasy for a lot of people. And I think it's done really well. And it's crushing because you sort of understand that as far as story goes, a shoe has to drop soon and it's going to be awful, I think. I mean, they're not going to like, that was great, Dad. We had a good adventure. I don't see how that happens. Also, they're abandoned. They're wrecked on an abandoned planet somewhere and they're probably going to die.
Yeah. It's a great setup and it's very much, it's just like, this is what the story is going to be. And unfortunately, Greg Rucka is going to be moving on and someone else is taking this over at issue 6.
Just saw who that was, and now I don't remember.
So it's just going to be this short little arc for him. So this is the story.
As long as
he gets to finish
his arc, I'm fine. I think I thought it was a mini series anyway.
And it's kind of life as a house in space. Yeah. It's like with a bit less angst.
It's Layman.
And that's right. Yeah. And that'll be like a completely different book. It's cool that he's, Rucka gets to tell this story and Dowderman, jeez.
Yeah, Russell Dowderman's a really, really wonderful art through this whole thing. What was the other?
For a big, talking head issue,
mm-hmm.
It's really pretty.
And he's going to be taking over for the Thor book, right?
Yes, he's going to be on Thor original recipe.
I chuckle at his name because they turned Thor into a woman and then brought on an artist named Dauterman.
He's the Dauterman, yeah?
Yeah.
He's a Dauterman. I doubt he's some... Anyway.
Draws great hair.
Yeah, no, he's a really good artist. I remember that you had mentioned him, Paul, on something he was on that I hadn't read that I can't remember what it was.
I can't think of it. Either,
when he showed up for the first time, you were like... that's a good artist, and every time I read this, I think, but you called that one.
Wow, I have great taste.
I know you do. So, what is happening over in the Guardians of the Galaxy?
So, Guardians of the Galaxy.
This is still Bendis.
This is still Bendis, and this has been tricky. I've been recommending people interested in the movie check out the Abnett and Lanning stuff, even though it's like totally crazy. But this book has just been beset by all these weird crossovers, like the all new X-Men stuff. And even though I like all new X-Men, if you just wanted to read a Guardians of the Galaxy book, it's had all these tangents and things, and like the Angela stuff.
Angela.
It's been a little problematic. I think it's now fallen into a nice groove where it feels like the movie. Like they're very clearly looking at the movie and that depiction of Star-Lord, which is also true of the Star-Lord solo title, which is great. At least so far, there's only been one issue, but I really liked it. The one thing I wanted to point out here, Michael Avon Oeming showed up for part of this book, not
the
all
art
of it.
Shift threw me.
It was weird. It starts as Nick Bradshaw, who's great.
Good artist.
Very good artist, and did a great Captain Marvel. And then you get to the scene with Drax fighting Gladiator in outer space, and it gets totally Ren and Stimpy. Just totally like roided out neck, and Captain Toastman or whatever from Ren and Stimpy? I don't know. But
Powder
Toastman. There you go. And it just reminded me of that. And they're just fighting in space, and it's just like gritting their teeth. I wouldn't have thought so, but I thought he was a great fit for the book. I wouldn't mind if he was the regular artist.
I didn't mind the art. I just minded the shift.
The shift is weird. And it goes back to Nick Bradshaw at some point. So it's just like
it really threw me in a way where I was not able to connect with the book in the way that I wanted to.
Yeah, and it's not like it's particular characters are you know their storyline is they're off doing one thing and that's Nick Bradshaw and then these other characters are Oeming. It's they're mixed. So you see both of them draw Star-Lord and they're both good. It's just weird that, but I wanted to say that this is probably. Also, the next issue, they're going to reveal what happened to the original Nova, Richard Rider.
That I'm very interested in.
Yeah, so
I don't trust Bendis to tell us what happened.
She was another closet door.
Forgotten about exactly.
No, that's the door, man. That is
the door.
This is what we've been waiting for this whole time, Josh.
Sure,
it's all connected.
It was old Dickie Ryder in there. Paul, get the money.
Get the money. All right. So if you want to pick up some Guardians of the Galaxy merch, like some Legos and shit, you should go over to Amazon or ifanboy.com/Amazon. I actually bought some Guardians of the Galaxy Legos. I love the movie that much. Go over there. We get a little piece of the action. Comes right out of Amazon's pocket. It's the same price that you would be paying anyway. So it does us a favor and helps keep the lights on. You can also help us out by going to ifanboy.com/registration. And you can give us like a monthly subscription kind of, donation, or it can be like a one-time thing. We appreciate, whatever it is. So thank you so much for doing that. We love you people. And it can be like $3 a month or $30 a year. That's pretty cool, right? That's like, you can't buy Legos for that.
Nope.
No, you cannot.
I'm looking right now. You can't buy more than one Guardians of the Galaxy figure.
No, you can't.
Toys are expensive now.
If you just wanted to buy the minifigs for Rocket and Groot, it's like $50.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
The toys mostly still look like, well, they have both kinds. They have the comic book ones and the other ones.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and
I certainly can't buy Legos with that. Good Lord. So The Wake, number 10 was out this week. This is the final issue in the story.
That's right.
I just wanted to, they won all the Eisner Awards, I believe. At least Sean Murphy and Scott Snyder did very well with
earned them.
Earned them definitely, because I think this was a story that delivered. One thing you can say about Scott Snyder is that he's been very good at ending a story, at giving you the sort of full thing. It's not just all the beginning.
Oh, and it's a huge story.
It's a really big story. Like it's almost too big. And I was like, oh, really? You're ending it because there's so much. It didn't feel like there was stuff left out or not, but like you realize that just some of it you have to sort of fill it in and understand it was a larger world. And I think it almost got away from them, but they got it.
It gets really trippy by the end. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, and I'm not even going to attempt to explain what happens, but it's cool. And I liked everything that happened, but and it felt very Scott Snyder. But the most important thing is the Dolphin made it out okay. There were like throughout these 10 issues, there were like two or three times where it was like, oh man, the Dolphin's dead. Killed the Dolphin. Even when she removes the tarp from like the crazy apparatus she made with the weird Scott Snyder Discovery like sharks that bore holes into you. I thought Under the Tarp was going to be a dead dolphin. I was like, oh my God, the dolphin makes it out okay. So that's thumbs up. Matt. Thumbs up for me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just quality work and craft the whole way through.
Ryan, tell us about the Samurai Jack number 10.
I don't know about you guys. I was a huge fan of Samurai Jack, the cartoon, Cartoon Network.
Gendy Tartakovsky?
Tartakovsky.
Tartakovsky, sir. There you go.
Something like that. My fiance and I have actually been going back and watching the old episodes. She'd never seen them. She loves them. She thinks Samurai Jack is, you know, a fantastic show with fantastic characters throughout. So I thought, I'm on the show this week. Why don't I try a new comic? Hey, look at this. Samurai Jack has a comic. So this is Samurai Jack number 10. And my main curiosity was to see if this comic would also be a one and done like most of the episodes of the show were. And it totally is. It's written by Jim Zub with art by, I don't have it up. Oh, no.
Does it look like Samurai Jack or does it?
It looks like a sketchy version of Samurai Jack. So it's definitely not aping the style of the show. It's in that the character designs are all consistent, but it's a lot looser. It's Andy Kuhn is the artist.
I love Andy Kuhn.
He's great. I had slight moments where reading the voices of the characters didn't mesh with what I would imagine them saying in the show, but they were super minor and the issue was a ton of fun. You know, it's just the typical Aku has a plan, Jack thwarts it. I think this would be totally all ages friendly, new reader friendly. It is a one and done. Check it out.
Cool. Josh, Sandman Overture number 3.
Just wanted to point out that I don't really like that I live in a world where there are new Sandman stories written by Neil Gaiman and drawn by J.H. Williams. And I just can't. It's so hard to read.
Yeah.
It's impenetrable, or I'm not excited about it or something. It's doing nothing for me.
This was such an event when they announced it. This is the biggest deal. This is crazy. We're actually going to see new Sandman, and nobody really talks about it.
Because it's not much to talk about. It's a lot of words, and I don't know if it's me. I don't know, but it does not have whatever that spark is that it should have in the past. I don't know if it sells.
Do you think that farm has sailed? And
I think it's
this
very
particular
much,
story isn't working.
I very much think that going back to something like that is a rough proposition. And I think that that's biting them. It's really hard to go back like that. You know, Neil Gaiman's a different entity now. I think. I don't know. I ended up like skimming a lot of it. And there's a cat, and it talks, and it's just, meh. Looks good. You know, it's J.H. Williams, so get that going for it.
What's going on with The Fuse, number 6?
The Fuse, I'm not going to say much about this issue specifically, because I know we're a spoiler-free show, but The Fuse is a crime, you know, mystery, thriller, sci-fi book. Written by Anthony Johnson, drawn by Justin Greenwood, published by Image Comics, and it's essentially a police procedural set on a space station. And it's a space station. It's a large space station with, you know, many, many levels of inhabitation, including homeless people who live in between the panels. They're called cablers. And so this first arc is about the murder of a couple of cablers and how that might be connected to the mayor of the space station.
Oh, I read the first issue.
Yeah, and it has to be solved by a new cop who's from Germany, who's just arrived on the space station, and he's got his Russian partner, and they're learning to work with each other, but they're also, you know, confronting the political structure of the space station and dealing with the underclass of the cablers. And this issue 6 is the conclusion of that first arc called The Russia Shift. And if you're into any of the genres that I just mentioned, you know, if you like crime, if you like police procedural, if you like sci-fi, this book
is going to...
You like
homeless people?
You like homeless people? This book's going to tick some buttons for you. And so I got to really...
Why am I not reading this?
Arc is done, just pick up the first trade when it comes out. You know, it's an Image trade, so it'll be affordable. And
right,
I hope more people go check out this book.
Finally, I want to wrap up with Chew Warrior Chicken Pollo number 1.
Okay.
If you've been reading Chew. Do you guys read Chew? Am I the only... Like, I feel like you
read Chew.
I do not.
I didn't think so.
I do.
This is a one-off about the Luchador Chicken, mm-hmm. Cyborg Luchador Chicken, and basically he is always fighting evil and injustice wherever it may be, and I was this is exactly what you think it's going to be. He goes back in time and he fights in sort of
He saves President Obama
and he goes and he fights like it's like an Arthurian kind of era. And there's their own kind of necro. What are they called? Doesn't matter.
Basically, they take all of the sciency esque terms for the food powers and make them magical.
Yeah, they add Mancer to the end instead of whatever, instead of Path. All I know is that in this, the moment that it got me, basically at one point in silhouette at the end of the fifth page, there's a crown being lowered on the silhouette of Poyo's head, and it said, "And how a hero became a king." And I laughed out loud real good, and I was fine for the rest of it. Didn't matter. That was, if we did a panels of the week, that would have been my favorite panel of the week, and it was a lot of fun. I really like the fun that they can have with Chew. And that is the comics of the week. That's a lot of them.
That was a lot of comics.
It is.
Gentlemen.
And I would like to move along so we can get to some of these audience questions before we run out of time. We can't have it. Can't have it. Paul, you want to read the first
one? Sure. Kyle from Ohio writes, "With the Agent Carter series and Michael Douglas casting as Hank Pym, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is beginning to fill in what took place between Captain America, the First Avenger, and the modern era. Imagining a scenario where Marvel Studios starts making period pieces that fill in that space in their history, what characters would you like to see populate the Marvel Cinematic Universe between World War II and 2008's Iron Man 1? Good question.
Namor.
But I feel, yeah, Namor Stole is mine. World Damn War II.
Really?
Yeah. He's not post-World War II, though, really.
Right, but, you know.
Whatever. He could show up after World War II. I'm fine with it. We've dealt with a Nazi threat, and oh, shit, it's Atlantis.
Yeah.
During the Red Scare?
Where is Atlantis?
No, I mean, I know it's not going to happen, but if Marvel Studios got the rights back for Fantastic Four, a Fantastic Four set in the 60s, as, you know, because their original reason for going into space was to defeat those darn Ruskies.
Right.
And I'd love to see that movie.
Yeah.
A period piece Fantastic Four movie.
Well, if wishes be fishes.
I mean, what, Josh, you say Namor, would you want the whole Invaders? Like, do you want Toro and Human Torch and all
that? No, I don't think that matches the Captain America story they told, and I think you have to have Captain America on that story, but I don't know. Yeah, I think that it would have been cool if they put that stuff in there, but I think Namor can exist on his own as a different thing. Although, if you have him allied with us somehow and then not, I don't know, it just, that seems like that's a supremely Marvel character. It's the first Marvel character if you look at Marvel Comics number one.
Yeah, let's hope in whatever contracts they sign he's not classified as a mutant.
Yeah, so actually he is though, isn't he?
He's the first mutant.
Yeah. Right.
Well, no, he's not the first mutant because I guess other mutants are older than him, but
yeah,
first published mutant.
And I'm trying to think of who else. It's interesting that we came up with that. Ryan, did you say the same thing or did you have a different one?
I would have. I mean, I was thinking about the whole Invaders, Human Torch. I think, you know, the original Human Torch is really more of a Golden Age character. He's not post-World War II, so yeah. I don't know how that works. And I don't think it really does work.
It doesn't work outside of World War II.
Yeah.
They're doing Iron Fist and Power Man, but like if you had like Wonder Man, like a 70s Wonder Man as an actor.
I mean, I would have loved
60s.
I would have loved if they'd done like Luke Cage and Iron Fist in the 60s or 70s.
Like a blaxploitation movie?
And actually get the creative team behind Black Dynamite and do it that way.
The although going back to the Human Torch, he is an Easter egg in Iron... Is it Captain America that he's an Easter egg? When Steve Rogers goes to the Stark Expo with Tony Stark's dad... You see Jim Hammond's suit in a case, much like the case that the original Human Torch was kept in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've played around with stuff like that. And that's like there's Easter eggs in the Asgardian treasure trove that they're using. Like, isn't like the Infinity Gauntlet in there or like the Eye of Agamotto or whatever?
Yeah, both those are in there.
I also think it would be cool if they'd introduced Stephen Strange like as a young man in like the 70s or 80s or something.
Yes.
And then he's older in the
80s,
present day.
80s excess era doctor.
Yeah. There you go.
That just screams for it.
Well, why not? Why not a Ghost Rider movie set back in, you know, the Evel Knievel days?
I have nothing. I have no reverence for Ghost Rider. None. I don't get it. I don't like it. I never have.
I mean, here's the thing is I'm trying to think of characters where their story could be enhanced by telling it in a different time period, because Marvel has done such an amazing job, and this is truly a credit to them and their studios and the way that they've been putting these movie universes together. They've done a great job of modernizing a lot of these characters that really do come from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And
they did most of the Captain America movie in World War II, which, by the way, was enormously to their credit. I was so surprised they did that.
There's sort of no point in doing this, but like if they had, do they have the rights to Punisher again?
I forget where that is at this point,
but like you could do that in like Vietnam.
Yeah, but I mean, see, to me, though,
but
Punisher,
at this point, it's you know, they it did is, two but, Punisher to me, movies. And
Punisher kind of, isn't a character who meshes with the Marvel Universe that well. I don't think of him as part of the overall arc.
I mean, I can see him being a part of the Netflix shows.
Yeah, but even then, he's what he is in comic books when he is that he's that chaos agent that goes in there.
He'd be great for like an episode on one of the Netflix shows, not his own series, just like an episode.
But even that, like, I don't know. Like that's what he would be, and he would be relegated to that, which would seem to not even do justice to the character. So to me, that doesn't work. Because he doesn't feel sort of integrally part of the Marvel universe. Like I wish like if it was the real Hawkeye, then you could do some really cool stuff. I guess you can with whatever Hawkeye is now, but it wouldn't be as fun because
you want to see some Black Widow covert ops as a KGB agent working against us.
You can't do that as I don't think you can do that as the main story. I think you could do that as, I mean, obviously you can do it because Bucky basically was that more or less. So yeah, I don't know if you could do that again. That couldn't be the movie though. Like the movie would have to be something else. I'm going to go with no because I feel like it's been done pretty much.
Just because.
No, like I feel like they sort of covered that with the Winter Soldier. That's kind of what that story was.
Yeah.
I keep seeing Star Fox in my head, but I don't know what to do with it.
He's going to be, Rick has said he's going to be a big part of his Avengers Rage of Ultron graphic novel. So maybe there will be a new Star Fox story. And that's set back in that's set in the early days of Ultron. That's not set in modern day. It's got original Blue Beast.
Oh, that's nice. Fun.
We've already seen Jerome Pena's art for it. So there you go, Josh. Maybe you. Star Fox. Let's wait for it. Sitting in the panel.
What are the Netflix stories?
It's going to be Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Iron Fist.
Get away with a Moon Knight.
That's not a period piece. Like I thought the question was about putting things.
I know. I'm trying to figure out how to place him. Thing is, though, my answer to all of these is 70s.
Yeah.
Why don't you do this? Yeah, you should do that in the 70s. And I know that's lame, but here's a sort of backwards answer to it. They seem to have the bases pretty well covered. I don't feel like there's a lot of holes. I mean, the immediate hole that we all found was Namor, and after that, it's kind of a reach because they've covered so much of it, or they seem to be. I think early Doctor Strange is sort of the only other sort of pure Marvel, bedrock Marvel. You know, besides that, you're doing like Starlin, Titans kind of stuff.
I will say that I hope, and with Edgar Wright, I thought it would be like a certainty. But with, you know, the creative changes, I just hope that with the Ant-Man movie, we're going to see a flashback to Hank Pym in his prime. You know, whatever that is, like the 70s, maybe the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, being Ant-Man.
And you have, I don't know. No, he doesn't have a kid alive. I don't know if you'd have to play that.
I just think that would be fun, like to actually do a flashback, not just of, you know, like Tony Stark's dad, but of, you know, an actual superhero.
Here's the thing, though, is that, like, I think what's sort of starting to happen is that we've seen so many superheroes learning to use their powers and how to be a hero. We're doing it. We've seen it so much that if I'm making movies from Marvel, well, we've covered that from a thematic standpoint. So let's do different eras of them. Let's do the established superhero, the reluctant, the older superhero, the, you know, the guy who thought he was out, but it was his last day on the job. Like, you kind of, you know, the learning to be a hero and figuring out how to do these, that's been covered so well. You know, however many Spider-Man versions there have been, Hulk versions and all that stuff. If I'm them, I'm looking for a different way to tell a superhero story because they have that luxury now that they can actually do different things instead of just the formula. I guess.
I want to see Vulture in the Jazz Age.
It's, you know, it really is terrible that you can't do Fantastic Four, because yeah, that is that's the other missing link.
I think that a Fantastic Four movie set in the 60s, so then you can jump to a modern Marvel movie where you've got Grizzled and Gray Reed Richards as like this.
See, I don't think that works.
He's the advisor.
I don't think they put him in the 60s. I think the earliest they could put him is the 80s. And they're fighting the Russians. 80s
is kind of fun.
80s Fantastic Four would be awesome. I think
that would be,
what if they just went cool. full bore and set it in 1994, the year of the terrible Fantastic Four movie?
I'd be into that too.
Because they can't do it in the 60s, because then they'd all be too far back.
Yeah,
they'd be super old. That worked in the 80s when you put stuff in the 60s, it kind of could track, but now it doesn't. And they've really covered it so well. I mean, it's tough. We should probably wrap it up.
Yeah,
save that other one, which is awesome. We'll do.
It is a good one. We'll talk about that.
Make sure we get to it. Anyway, why don't we? If you want to email us, you can write to contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you leave a voicemail, tell us who you are, where you're from, and you know, try to keep it under control. 30 seconds, you know. Don't send lots of 29-second silent spam.
Don't do it. Whoever's doing that, don't do that.
Yeah. Episode 450 is coming up. We are on 447 now. And that's going to be an all email show. So we need you guys to write in and put episode 450 in the subject line. We answer them all. We try to do as many as we can. So come along for that if you can. Paul, what's coming up? What else is there?
Well, actually, if you look down in your feed, you should see the Guardians of the Galaxy Special Edition podcast. Should I reveal our special guests?
Sure. What the hell?
Ryan Haupt and Ron Richards are our special guests. Connor is away on vacation. He has weird priorities, leaving during this very important time in all of our lives.
Yeah.
The Marvel Cosmic Universe on the big screen. So you can check that. That's going to be immediately under this in your feed.
If you're listening, then that show is available.
That is available. Yeah. It's a weird time travel thing.
Yep. Where do they go?
It's weird temporal distortion. So you can head on over to ifanboy.com. You can come in on this show. We talk about this week's books and find out about all of our other podcasts, like the one I just mentioned.
You can also follow the action on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is before the show. You can follow us individually on Twitter at Haupt, at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Fuzzy Typewriter.
And finally, if you like us, one of the best things that you can do for us, other than the aforementioned ways that we talked about, is to give
presents.
Us money. Presents. You can send us presents. We have wish lists. What the hell? like strippers. Is that sexist? It is, isn't it?
You didn't say what kind of stripper.
It's true. I guess that's just the leap. Listen, there are people on the internet. They get naked. They give you their wish list. It's a thing. They want people to buy them for them because of the relative visual value of the goodies. That's what I'm getting at. If you think that's okay, it's fine.
I'm a paint stripper. It's in his turpentine.
It's above me. Anyway, if you like us, you can write a review on iTunes. That guy hates strippers. That's what it is. I like that show, but that one guy hates strippers. And also, he's got the definition for strippers wrong. I'm miming typing angrily, by the way. Oh, better yet, even more better, tell people about it. Spread it. Spread the word.
What happened?
Hey, maybe your friends don't like comics. Maybe they like science.
Compare the end of the show to your very eloquent beginning of the show, where it's very meticulous, very careful.
It's getting near midnight. It's warm in the kitchen, and I had a baby wake me up before 6 a.m. That's what I can tell you what's happening right now. So if you like something that we do, spread it among your friends, either in the social networking or however you do it. Even tell somebody. It doesn't even matter. But if you do that, we really appreciate that. We thank you. No judgment. No judgment. That's all for the show.
Okay, so that's it for this week's show. Thank you for listening. I have been Paul.
I have been Ryan.
I am Daniel Craig. Sorry, Josh.
You wish. You wish, man.
I can't even do an impression. It's not even a thing.
It wasn't this the is, worst photo comparison.
This is
actually.
Why you should follow Josh on Instagram.
Yeah. I did.
I was just scrolling through. I was doing that like quick scroll, like just what's going on, and oh god, not again!
I totally did.
Not again!
I bought the exact jeans that he wore in Dragon Tattoo. Because I came out of that movie and they're like, you like the movie? I like the movie a lot. It was good. Did you see his jeans in that?
Here's what I love about this. I've had this conversation with you more than once.
Uh-huh. I'm not saying it's okay.
When the movie came out and then now.
So. And that's, it's been years that I still haven't let that go.
Shocking.
You bought fun.
They're nice, they're nice pants. The way I feel. I don't know why. Well, I learned from my mistakes. This time I will escape.